This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Aloha and good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day. How did you like that good Sunday morning song? If that don't get you up and ready to go to church and to do whatever and start off with the football game, nothing will. Andre 3000. But anyway, I'm glad to be back here and chatting with you and sharing with you some of the new digs, ups, and what have you. I want to share with you a story that you saw it on KGMB. It's regarding a company who is, per the state, health department is actually operating without the necessary licenses and permits and all. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to share this with you in greater details, because TV gives a minute and a half and they'll tell a story and you'll hear a portion of it. And it's just a hit and miss in a sense. But we're going to spend an hour, and I've invited a former employee there who we relied on that contacted me originally and informed me that this company allegedly were actually involved in dumping waste, oil, and other materials. And so I thought, you know, it's the election time, and I thought, well, how can I use this to share with the listener, the voter, rather than saying, I'm not going to vote for Ige, I'm not going to vote for Iona or DeJew or whoever, or Hanneman. I thought I would toss out something, and so that when they come to these so-called soup meetings or beef stew meetings and chili and rice, and they're holding a sign, you might be inclined to stop and pull over while they're holding a sign and ask them. You know, with the increase of and high numbers of cancer and illnesses and what have you, what would you do to rectify this? Here is a company allegedly operating on a major scale who is, just by the records now that we are privy to, does not have the necessary permits to haul. And there's such disconnects, and it's all relevant because you and I can get sick from these dumpings of chemicals and what have you, and oils, and so can our environment. And then we go out to the beach, and eventually that material ends up in the beach, air sand, and you in the water, and just... The whole thing is kind of loopy. So I'm going to share with you some... These are major missteps. And we can ask... You know, we talk about economics. We talk about what Duke believes in religion and what, if he's Catholic, what Ige is going to hire Hanabusa to bring her on as a chief of staff. I don't know any of that to be true. But... Take this one, for example, this discussion and what I'm going to share with you, and parlay that into asking, how can you, as a governor, if you are elected, assure us that you will make sure that these efforts that we see out here, agencies that are enforcing the law, supposedly, and city and state and DLNR and health department, they all share the same goal in protecting by legislative mandate. But how is it that they don't? And how is it that a company could allegedly operate in this town without, number one, registering as a business? And this is a major company. And the company is Hawaiian Pumping Specialist. And then there is the... another company is that is associated with that, or the same, one and the same, is the Washington Pumping Specialist. And so starting from scratch, the Hawaiian Pumping Specialist, I pull up the registration for business names here in the state of Hawaii, the formal site, the official site, and the general information on pumping, Hawaiian Pumping Specialist, is the file number is 12402199T8. And the status, now, mind you, this is the official records. Now, there may be something else out there, but what's available to the public through the website of the state DCCA website for businesses, the status of that business, the Hawaiian Pumping Specialist LLC, is actually expired, and they registered in February 16, 2010, and they have articles of an organization and articles of organization, the remarks, and that is all we find so far on their records. But this company is operating on a major scale. And so the other question is, he lists a number of businesses that this company service here, major companies, Young Brothers, Hawaiian Electric Company, and this is taken from that company's website. Hawaiian Tug and Barge, Pacific Shipyards International, Shaka Engineering, Puglia, Vigor Marines, Foss, Metzen Marine, Diversified Marine, Kiewit, Jennings Pacific, P&R Water Taxi, HMS, PCE. Now the question is, how then can this company advertise so openly on a website and operate so openly for years in the state of Hawaii without the necessary registration, without the necessary permits that we've come to learn? This is per the state health department. How can he operate on a major scale, and why is it that these companies and this company is allowed to operate on military bases, hauling chemicals, oils, and what have you? How can that happen? So I've also invited, as I told you earlier, one of the former employees, and he's now on the line, and I want to invite him, Charlie, and we'll go, and we'll have him to share with us in this discussion. Feel free to call in. 524-1080 is the number, 524-1080, and you can pick this up if you're having a little static. Go to KWAI 1080 AM and listen live on the internet. And by the way, I never did this before, but go to our Facebook, and I am going to start doing a lot more of these stories on the Facebook, because giving them to the TV station, sometimes you're standing in line waiting for them to do it or what have you, and I think no news is any good if it's old news. So anyway, I'm going to welcome Charlie aboard. Charlie, good morning. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm raring to go, man. reared up, and I was looking some more on the website of this company's website.
Yes.
And my goodness, to operate without permits, and then to boldly display who you service and that you're hauling chemicals that you don't have a license to haul, and apparently I couldn't find any certification for some of the drivers or see the trucks that they were placarded. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your involvement in this, and I want to publicly thank you for coming forward, because a lot of times people say, I can lose this and I can lose that, and there are just some of us out there want to stand up for what's right. And so thank you, and I appreciate what you've done, and believe it or not, you lit the fire under my butt even more so. But go ahead and tell us about yourself a little bit, and then tell us about this company and what was your capacity.
Okay. Well, first off, thanks for having me on the show.
All right.
And my name is, you know, Charles. I was working for Dingo for a little while. I was his general foreman, you know, running the jobs and projects for him.
Mm-hmm.
As far as you had mentioned in the capacity, it included, you know, taking care of all the actual on-site and off-site, just the dealings with the hazardous waste and, you know, running the projects. Now, you had mentioned about the drivers, and that you'd seen that there you couldn't find any of the certifications for them. That was one of the first problems that I encountered while working for him, when a few of his employees actually refused to drive onto the military installations because they were worried that they were going to get caught. And, you know, to me, this is a surprise. I was like, you know, how can you get caught? You don't have any certs? And that's when I discovered that there was no certification, there was no licenses, there was nothing that these, you know, employees had. And so I talked to Dingo later on and asked him in that evening's meeting. And he told me that he was in the process of hiring somebody, you know, getting a licensed driver, and that I just needed to figure out how to get the jobs done now. You know, and of course I notified him that, you know, that's not going to happen. We can't drive onto a military installation with all the paperwork, you know, that these guys are supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I also at that point asked him, I notified him that, you know, there's no paperwork in the vehicles. There's no safety check paperwork. There's nothing. There's no insurance cards. What do we do to get those? You know, do I need to come by the office? And he told me, oh, yeah, we keep everything at the office. Well, the problem with that is the material has to be on hand in the vehicle at all times, you know, of course, in case anything happens. But there was no paperwork that ever came about. You know, that was something that continually went on. I asked and just got the runaround for all vehicle information and paperwork. There was never any manifest drawn up, no placards. And this is hazardous material that we're transporting. It's, you know, regulated in a very strict manner. There's guidelines. I mean, we have to attend meeting after meeting after meeting that is notifying us what's legal and what's not, what we're required to do. And everything was just, oh, don't worry. You know, we'll get to that. We'll get the manifest later. I've already taken care of it. Well, I'm creating job files, and I have nothing in my job file. So it definitely it added up really quick that there was something, you know, not right going on.
Now, on his website, Hawaiian Special, Washington Pumping Specialist, and Hawaiian Pumping Specialist, one and the same, he indicated, as I read off a list of companies, when, so that we treat him with accuracy and not slander or make false statements or claims, you worked there as a general manager. What do you know specifically sites that he actually serviced, even though it's on his website, some of the companies he claimed to have serviced as clients? You, as a manager, what did you see and know that he actually physically went to and serviced these contracts or provided service in hauling and disposing?
Well, during my time with him, he was out in Connery Marine Corps Base, servicing their lift stations out there. Out in Pearl Harbor, he was actually in under the Asheville, the submarine, servicing the sand tanks. There was a few other projects in Pearl Harbor and in Fort Island, servicing some of the fuel barges and some of the other fuel tanks out there.
And from those servicing, he actually, it was generated, there was waste generated that he actually hauled?
Yes, there was a lot of waste. I mean, that's what his job was to actually haul the waste and dispose of it. That was the scope of work for us, on the submarine job and on all the fuel barges, as well as for the tanks, we were to wash and remove any of the, you know, chemical that was left, the hazardous chemical.
And so what kind of quantities on any given job, what was some of the largest quantities that you...
I'll actually state one that we were working on. It was about 75,000 gallons. That we were treating on the Pearl Harbor job. It was an actual tank that still contained 75,000 gallons of its bilge water, diesel, oily water, leftover chemicals from the ships that come in. They dump them off. But the problem was that the H2S levels were too high, so it was actually deemed, you know, hazardous material. Well, we had to wear full body respirators, you know, to work with. And it was about 75. It was, I think the actual number was around 77,000 gallons that was being treated.
And this is when you say H2S. This is hydrogen sulfide. This is the one with the rotten egg smell that'll choke you and kill you if you overwhelmed by it.
Well, yeah, this one is definitely deadly. You know, it just takes your breathing a little bit, and it actually turns into a acid in your lungs. It crystallizes in your lungs, and it's a horrible. Experience.
Now, as general manager, did you witness him training or training any of his people to actually drive these trucks and prepare and to tend these tanks and clean them?
No, there was no training involved, which was another thing that it came up. Our scope of work on the Asheville, a lot of the different projects we were on, I had asked for the certifications, and, you know, just to have on my file so that I could present those. But there was nothing that ever came up of it. It was always, oh, well, you know, we have those, but we keep them in office, or, oh, I just have the guys recerted, you know, the paperwork's in the mail. It was the runaround, you know. I've never seen any paperwork or witnessed any training at all with these guys.
Now, certification of the truck. Each truck, when hauling, has to be placarded. Where, do you recall seeing any placards? And so the listener will understand, a placard basically is a safety measure for, without going into all of the details. You put a placard on telling what it is in case a truck spills or in case there's an emergency with the truck. And emergency responders would know how to treat it in case it flipped over. You know, you wouldn't want to show up and start dumping water on acid, right? So
yeah.
That would be why the trucks would be placarded. But as you recall, you don't recall seeing any placards or them having any placards as a general manager, correct?
No, there wasn't. We actually had an issue where there was a driver that was finally hired. There was a certified driver, but he came on and he wouldn't drive the vehicles because there was no placards, there was no paperwork. The state of disrepair was against what DOT actually asked for and says that it is legal to drive on the road.
Mm-hmm.
He filed those, you know, called me and, you know, told me his concerns and let me know that, you know, a couple of the vehicles he's not driving, which were, you know, scheduled to be used on jobs. Now, those vehicles, even though they were in a state of disrepair and had no paperwork, still somehow managed to make it to the jobs. You know, Dingo actually had the other guys drive them out, the unlicensed drivers again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was against those guys, you know, they stressed their concern to me left and right. But they're worried about their job. They're worried about, oh, well, you know, I'm being told that I have to drive this. I told him no, and he's saying, okay, well, you don't have a choice. Get the truck there. You know, we need to take care of this job. You're not doing your job. These guys were concerned for their own job, you know.
Right. Now, getting on the military bases, and I'm a little curious to know how, in fact, did if they weren't placarded trucks, the drivers weren't certified, how did they gain access? Were they subcontracting for a main contractor, or were they the primary contractor? And if so, how did they get these trucks on to the base?
Well, to tell you the truth, it was actually a game of roulette. The operating procedure that he had us do, which he said that he's been doing for quite a while, was to literally try every gate. We would pull up to the gate. we would literally go from gate to gate and back and forth, you know. We had times where we would go on standby for 6 hours to wait for the guards to change shift.
Right.
To get the vehicles on base with a guard that, you know, wouldn't necessarily check everything. And then he would stage his vehicles on the base so that he didn't have to drive them off and on, risking not being able to get on base.
So he would get lucky, find a way on, then these tanker trucks are, how large, there's a big black one, how large is that one? What's the volume?
There's a few different trucks. He's got, you know, the tankers out there, they're capable of hauling, I believe, like 18,000 gallons.
Okay.
And so on.
So he first of all, to get on base on these military installations, he play the Russian roulette as you describe, or get lucky. He drive up to this gate, and then they tell him no. Then he go to the other gate, and until he finds someone that is not really on their toes and enforcing the law, and they let him in. So you're saying that once he's in, he may just take a portion of the material and then park the truck and wait until he fill it up and then leaves because he don't want to risk getting caught coming in again or being denied?
Yeah, correct. He had a yard that he was using over there where he would stage his equipment.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working with him, you know, that's where we would, you know, put our vehicles on base. But it was, I mean, he was blatant and told me that it was because of that, because he wasn't, you know, sure if they would be able to get back on the next time.
Mm-hmm. And so the military then would what would they be looking for if they, in denying him, what kinds of things would they deny him for entry?
They would deny him, first off, for the vehicle not having the information.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the vehicle, it was as far as there was no paperwork even for insurance.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, the vehicles didn't have safety checks on a few of them. In the beginning when I started there.
Mm-hmm.
So these vehicles, there was no paperwork, no safety check. There was no manifest that was on, you know, the vehicles when we were moving loads.
Mm-hmm.
Coming off the bases. I never had manifest for my jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So So those vehicles are subject to being checked even coming off the base.
Right. Because you're carrying a load now that yeah. the military is generating or the federal government is responsible for, because
correct.
it's their waste, no matter who has it, the generator is responsible. But they weren't scrutinizing, and what other trickery or behavior did he use to evade or avoid detection that he didn't have these permits? Any other things, or what other behavior did he do?
As far as behavior, I mean, that was about it for the gates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was just mainly trying to get through at different times.
Mm-hmm. And what about personal protective gear? Was each man provided certified protective gear in these instances, or would you say, or can you describe?
Well, when we first started, when I first started with him working for the company, the vehicles all had their own PPE and everything that was set up.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was that there was incorrect PPE for the jobs that we were doing. Handling H2S, you don't have a, you know, half-face respirator with just regular cartridges. You know, you've got special full-face masks that you're required to use. Yet, that was the appointed PPE for the job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're sending guys in to go work, telling them that this is the correct PPE. There's supposed to be somebody regulating that on the military side and our side,
right.
on the federal installation.
On the ocean, so, what have you.
Yeah, so I contact him and I, you know, let him know, and there's big humbug, you know, oh, well, you know, that's fine. I found out that we can use those. No, we can't. We were actually working under a general contractor over there. And I ended up talking with the general. He brought it up to me four or five different times, and he told us, look, he actually stopped us from working because we were using the incorrect material, the mask. So we had to leave the job site. Now I call up Dingo, you know, and I explain to him, look, we don't have the correct stuff to do this job, the PPE. You know, this is unsafe. There's people's lives at risk. Like, it's not a game of roulette. It will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Our entire scope of work is to treat a hazardous material that is life-threatening. So why are we going in there and not handling it like hazardous material?
As you're required. If you hold on 1 second, there's a caller. We'll
go ahead.
Good morning, caller. Thank you for waiting. Comment or question?
Question. Aloha kakahiaka.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Carol, thank you so much for bringing this guest on this morning. I live out in Waianae.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard from friends about, you know, illegal dumping of hazardous materials, and I've always blown them off, like, yeah, right. Then we had our sludge incident, you know,
mm-hmm.
from Waikai. I was even told that people were dumping illegal stuff in Waimanalo Gulch, and, you know, I blow them off, too, like, yeah, right. You know, there's supposed to be people who check, you know, federal, state, and county levels, and
right.
I never believed that those violations were actually true. Could you please ask our guest where they were taking the material? I know, you know, he's shared enough. I believe they've taken it off base. I believe there's companies local that are doing these illegal activities, but where are they taking them? Are they just dumping them out in Waianae?
Okay, Charles, you have the magic words.
Yeah. Well, as much as the material goes, it's actually different dump sites. They use a manhole out in Pro City most often when I was there. The standard was that most of the material that they would dump through a manhole out in the Pro City area. They also would store a majority of the material out on a yard that they had over in Kapa'a Quarry. As far as the disposal of that went, there's a lot of different areas that he's actually dumped in. Which one of is Kapa'a Quarry, which they've actually got the state and health department out looking at the different areas over there. You know, the oil saturation of the ground, it's just something that there is no disposal site that is used as far as I know out in Waianae. But he has told me a few different times that, you know, we've got this hazardous waste. Hey, you know, you know any place in Waianae we could go dump this? And I've been asked, you know, straight up by him about that. So I only stayed with the company for about 3.5 months because of the level of things that was going on, I didn't want to be involved with this at all. You know, it's not correct. It's not right. You know, you're putting people's lives at risk just with the hazardous material. Just because you know how to get around the laws or the right people to talk to or the right way to say things, you know, dumping in places like the Kapa'a Quarry, we've got the endangered land over there, the marsh, endangered species. Down, further down the river, it actually filters into an area where people go kayaking and swimming. Now, can you imagine swimming in raw sewage, in treated chemicals, in H2S, in oil? I mean, with all the cancer and everything else that we have nowadays, you know, these are concerns that it's a big deal. I mean, it's a lot of material. It's not like it was a one-time thing. So yeah, as far as the dump sites go, it's located in a few different areas, but like I said, it's mainly out in the Kapa'a Quarry area that I'm aware of, and out in the Pearl City manhole that I was witness to.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, does the manhole mean that it goes straight into our sewer system?
Well, there's two types of sanitary, and then there's a sewer. So there is a practice where the city provides a permit to haulers to dump in the manholes. But it's very innocuous material in a sense, things that wouldn't continue to be harmful, let's say, to the environment, because the Sand Island Wastewater Treatment Plant or the Honolulu Wastewater Treatment Plant does not have the ability to do away with or neutralize all of these chemicals that they put in, that this gentleman supposedly put in, allegedly. So what happens is that it goes through and it collects there at the bar screenings, and when they there's going to be oil residue or whatever's in there, right? But if he's pumping hydrogen sulfide in these tanks, in these sewers, then maybe that explains sometimes when the spikes in hydrogen sulfide levels at the plants themselves, the smelly rotten egg smell, that's associated with. I don't know, and I don't want to speculate too much, but I can say that here's the telltale sign. Imagine now, in my opening, I said, I want to show you what you can ask the politicians. How will they mend this? Why on earth would the city and county of Honolulu give a company a permit to dump in their sewer system and not ask, do you have a license to haul? Are you a bona fide hauler? You follow? And if so, so there's a great divide there and a dysfunction on the part of the city and on the part of the state for failing to have the ability or the need or the desire to communicate with one another, because you become a facilitator of the dumper.
It's so bad, it's almost funny. I mean, if we don't laugh about it, we're going to have to cry, I guess.
Yeah. And just keep in mind, I think, let's say Sand Island is generally, they're already blowing it over there with the ferrous oxide that they pump in the water, but they were supposed to be using ultraviolet light to kill the bacteria and whatever. And so that in itself is a conflict. So there's a great divide in just common sense on the both parts of both agencies, of the state agencies. How can a company operate on this level and go undetected and without a permit and being not inspected in the DOT, the federal DOT, and the state DOT? How can anybody operate this way? These are the things we need to ask these politicians that's promising to fix everything. What the hell are they going to fix if we're dying from cancer?
Talking about fixing, we have a sewer system that's deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're adding these chemicals, could it not also facilitate its breakdown?
Well, they serve as corrosives, and depending on, and only Charlie can tell us exactly what was in that out there, and it would be mere speculation on my part, but still, yeah, it would create problems, and if it's oil and grease and on cooler temperatures, it may solidify and cake up and it causes restrictions and gum. Now, I don't know now. These are potentials that I'm speaking to. What do you say, Charlie?
Yeah, as far as it goes, to my knowledge, the facilities, they're not capable of handling this kind of product. The product itself, you know, could definitely damage. Is what they have is screens and different things, filters that they use.
Mm-hmm.
And this product is going to damage that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The way that this material is treated is we don't even have a facility on the island that treats this hazardous material.
Yeah.
We actually send it over to the mainland, to the plants over there. That's the correct disposal process.
Yeah, let me share something with you, a greater implication environmentally. And so those of you out there that think this is some isolated incident or something you really, it's about an environmentalist wacko talking stupid, let me just tell you how this plays downstream. We know that, as Charlie say, the gentleman has dumped it in the streams in Kapaa Quarry, which meanders, the stream meanders down to the Kawainui Marsh, which is a number of endangered species. So it doesn't take that much oil to addle an egg, meaning that one drop getting on an egg, especially a coot or gallinule and other endangered birds, other birds, they expend energy, first of all, preening themselves when they get in the feather. So instead of incubating and feeding their young, they're actually spending energy preening themselves and then leaving them exposed to weathers and not being able to float and swim because they need that. So then the addling of when the parent comes along and swims in a sheen of oil, all that is necessary is a sheen, comes and go and sit on that egg and incubate it, it addles that egg potentially, killing that egg. So you're reducing the population there. Those are just some of the implications. But here's a greater one. So those of you that don't care much about the animal aspect of it, let me just tell you about the human aspect. The Honoluli wastewater treatment plant, in which some of these things are being dumped in the pipe that leads there, and their hydrocarbons and oil base and sulfur, and who knows what they're dumping. Honoluli is a, they use that water, recycle it through reverse osmosis. Now, are they taking all of the benzenes and all the other chemicals out of the water when they, no, because if we're thinking it's just wastewater, just natural wastewater generated by the house or the resident. So if you go to any golf course out in that area, Ever Beach and all, they talk about using R3 water, recycled water. So this water even is placed on our soccer fields. So if your child is showing up with tumors or sicknesses or illnesses, there is probably back upstream someone dumping in that. So why would the city not be concerned? Why would the city not do diligence and screen and ask this company, who the hell are you? We don't even show you as a registered business. So you don't even have a permanent place of business. You're parking most of your cars and trucks on the street in Halava. You're up at Kapaa Quarry, and you give an address in IL. So what is really going on? These are the things that these communities, such as Waianae and all, we're all susceptible to the abuse by this company and the drag-ass behavior on the part of the state and the city. You there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And there was a call, another call awaiting, and just... But anyway, any other question or comment?
No, thank you so much.
Okay, well, we'll got to check on that sludge out there in Waianae anyway to find out if they actually, if it flowed out because they had a big rain last night, so we'll see.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, caller.
Hello. Hello.
Charles, any more?
No, that's the most of it for now.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. I'm going to, caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. How about you, sir?
I'm okay. You stayed above the water? You kept your head up?
Man, you know, every time it rains, because I live next to the stream, I hold my butt. You know what I mean? Because I'm surrounded by, you know, the stream, so it can get really scary here. But get to the point where you guys are. And I'm really concerned. You know, I used to work on the Marine Air Corps base in the 80s. And if you guys are familiar, they have a dump on base. And you familiar with that one?
Yeah. Yeah, they have. There's an active dump over there right now
on the
Marine base.
So, and that's on that one. I don't know if the one I'm talking about, because all the material that we had on our job sites that we had to get rid of, we went out, it's like on the very end of the island, on the big rock, and you're behind it, like, you know, it's kind of hidden from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff has got to be polluting the ocean beyond belief every time it has, been big rains. It's got to fill that thing up, but you're on a rock, right?
And then I don't know if it's even lined, but you're talking about as it go up to Ulupau Crater, up there to the bird sanctuary, and then also the theater there, the firing range, right?
No, I'm from, see if you're in Marine Corps Air Base.
Yeah.
Well, we got the Pyramid Rock right on the very end.
Yeah, that's, we're talking the same one.
Yeah, and then you drive up and you don't see nothing, all of a sudden you make a left-hand turn and boom, here's a bulldozer pushing stuff into piles and stuff. You know, I'm going, man, this is the most polluting place I've ever seen in my life. So I remember I dumped paint there, this is back in the 80s, you know, 83, 84. And the boss said, hey, everything you got on the job site that you're not going to use, you get rid of right there. That's it. You know?
Just dump it.
You get it out of the truck, and, you know, that's the end of the subject. So I think, you know, somebody's going to look into that one, because that bugger is so blatant, you can't really hide it after a while, because there's only so much room there.
Right. Yeah, well, we'll ask some questions and ask the city there. But, you know, hold on. Charles.
Yes.
Now, you know, every truck has to have a safety inspection. Even my car and the average citizen's car has to have a safety inspection. I don't know if there's waivers. How did this person or this company get its trucks certified to be safety or get safety inspection pass if they not going through the process of a DOT and what have you? How were they getting their safety inspection?
Well, the majority of the time he would you know, just kind of push us to use the vehicles without the actual inspection. But it became an issue, once again, I said earlier, that we had a certified and licensed driver that was hired, you know, for a brief period that refused to drive the vehicles. That was one of his...
enforced the law. Yeah, the rules.
So, I mean, because he's liable. As a driver, he's liable for the vehicle that he drives. And he's looking at it like, this thing, the vehicle doesn't even look like it's safe to get in. But as far as it went with the safety check, he had me take one of his vehicles out to get safety check because we were complaining about it. And it was denied immediately out at Sand Island. I mean, they literally walked out, and before they got to the vehicle, the guy told me, he was just like, look, I'm sorry, I'm going to tell you right now, that vehicle is not going to pass. You know, he was like, I'm not even going to waste my time with it, I'm telling you right now. That vehicle is not safe to drive. So then, you know, I had him do an actual punch list for me of different things that we needed to fix on the vehicle to make it safe to drive. Which, you know, included things like the headlights. Headlights didn't work. The actual tires, there was no tread on some of the tires. So he was requiring them to be changed, different things like that.
And what type of truck, in this instance, was this particular truck? Large truck? Tanker?
This one was go ahead.
Tanker or guzzler or type?
It was a vacuum truck. It was a 15. It was the 1500. It's called. That was the nickname we had for it. But it's a vacuum truck, capable of carrying just under 2,000 gallons of material. And it's one of the main vehicles that he uses, you know, on a day-to-day operating basis.
And you guys were rejected by this particular shop. And then what then happened? How did it get? Eventually, did it get? Safety inspection, and how did it get that safety inspection?
Yeah, well, the safety inspection, actually, when we were rejected, the driver was worried about driving it, because out on Sand Island is actually a DOT place that they watch for vehicles, and you're supposedly supposed to pull into a weigh station. Well, you know, they just got in the vehicle and had to kind of drive past without a safety check. And just, you know, chance it of not getting pulled over for not pulling into the weigh station. But, you know, after that, we were on the phone, and we ended up meeting Dingo out at, right by the stadium mall. And we pulled up, and we were telling him that, you know, what do we do now, because we're not going to be able to get on base. And he told us, oh, don't worry, I'll take care of it, I'll take care of it. Well, we're sitting back like, okay, you know, we've got a data run, you know, a schedule, what are we going to be doing? So he bought us lunch, you know, and we actually ended up meeting with somebody during lunch. A guy came, and Dingo bought him lunch, you know, it was a little plate lunch place. Well, during lunch, he actually, you know, handed the guy an envelope, the guy handed him some paperwork, and next thing you know, Dingo had a safety check.
And while never going to a shop to get it inspected or anything, it was handed an envelope and another envelope handed, and had all the safety inspection and that information, huh?
Well, it's not only not that he didn't go to a shop, but we had literally just come from a shop being rejected. And not rejected like, oh, well, you know, the vehicle is in poor condition. Mm-hmm. Rejected as in get that vehicle off the road. It's not safe to drive.
And what was the shop that rejected you guys? You recall?
I can't recall off the top of my head.
But it's on Sand Island.
Yeah, correct.
Oh, okay. But so this whole process, and did you actually witness him dumping into the Kapa'a stream?
Out on the Kapa'a side, yeah. And as the caller that had just called in,
mm-hmm.
Was talking about, you know, the actual material and stuff that was dumped from a military base and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that he said that caught my attention was that, you know, it's so blatant that it has to be caught eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the truth of the matter is most of these sites, most of these areas, I mean, even not concerning just this company, a lot of this is so blatant. The people around it, that's how they feel. I mean, I'm pretty sure that guy that called in, the caller, never reported it. You know, because thinking about it, it's like it's so blatant that somebody's going to catch these guys. Somebody's going to see this.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's such strict laws and regulations. You go on the website and see numbers like $25,000 a day fines for, you know, storage or illegal dumping.
Mm-hmm.
You think it's very, very, you know, highly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem is it seems like, contrary to belief, it's not. Whether or not it's because the government itself has too much going on, the departments that are supposed to handle this, you know, have their hands tied or what,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it seems like it's up to us now, you know, as employees. I know that there's some other employees that have witnessed stuff that was working for this guy. You know, we see so much.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that, oh, you know, the state will get this guy. You know, one of the biggest things that was always said by all his employees to me was, you know what? We're not exactly sure if what we're doing is right, but I know that, you know, if it's wrong, he's going to get busted. He's going to get caught. You know, it'll eventually catch up to him. You know, well, this is, from what I understand, this guy's been in business for years, and it's never caught up to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, years of dumping material like that lasts a lifetime. That lasts beyond your lifetime, generations. So who's to say that he's going to be held accountable for any of that? No one.
Yeah.
Just because there's strict laws doesn't mean that you're going to be held accountable for it.
Mm-hmm. And you've been meeting with the state, you've spoken with the state health department, and I understand there's another employee also that have come forward and unbeknownst to me, prior to you contacting me, apparently the state was already looking at it, but I don't know what they were looking for. I guess looking at it and looking to investigate. I get confused when they say we're looking at it. You know,
yeah,
you're not an agency to go window shopping or looking at it. You should be investigating and regulating, right?
Yes.
But did the state ever come to you prior to you contacting me or anything?
No, not prior to me contacting you. I wasn't contacted by the state at all. As far as their investigation goes on that side, you know, it was initiated by somebody else that was working for him. Which just goes to show that, you know, people do care and want to come forward, but, I mean, you don't have to do it on a public level like I am.
Right.
You know, you guys can call in, there's discreet lines. You know, I just urge you that when you see stuff like this, think about the children, think about the kids, think about the environment. This is our land that we live on here in Hawaii, our ocean, and our kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're the only ones that are going to be accountable for it in situations like this. We have the ability to help stop this.
Right.
You might not be able to stop everything, but, I mean, whether you think it helps or not, call in. Call somebody. Say something.
Yeah, be anonymous.
Go ahead.
Be anonymous. And military, not to say that they're dumping any major chemicals, but there's associated with that activity. And if he's doing that, what else is he doing? If there are other people is willing to give him materials that they can't get rid of, and you had indicated that he was storing H2SO or the hydrogen sulfide on a certain parcel. Where is that at? Where was he storing that, and what was the approximate volume?
That was out at Kapa'a Quarry, and it wasn't approximate. It was just about it was 1,000 gallons
mm-hmm.
of material.
Mm-hmm.
That was the material that was in one of his trucks on a federal job site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was out on Pearl Harbor. And his truck actually was faulty. The reason it ended up leaving was because they had put it in his truck because they had issues or whatnot. I wasn't there for it, but I heard that there was a spill. once again, I wasn't there for it, but the other employees told me there was a spill, and as for containment reasons, they had to use the trucks, which are there on site, to vacuum it up.
Mm-hmm.
So he used his truck, but the state of disrepair that these vehicles were kept in, the truck didn't hold the material. It was leaking.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to take it off-site immediately. So he literally jumped in the vehicle and drove it off the Pearl Harbor base and out to Kapa'a Kori Road where he started.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed out there at Kapa'a Kori, there's just material spread over the ground and it's caked and thick and oily and greasy. Did he bury any stuff out there or pump anything in the ground out there?
Oh, it was, yeah. The vehicles that he had, that was actually one of the things that was my final straw. He would pull the vehicles into the area over there, which he had me put up a dust barrier so that you couldn't really see what was going on from the outside. He wanted it to be as private as possible.
So it wasn't, though it's called a dust barrier, it wasn't to keep the dust out, well, or keep it in. He wanted to keep looky-loos out, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, I actually installed that, and when I cut the, if anybody's familiar with the dust barrier, it's the big black
cloth there.
Yes, cloth that they put around job sites to keep dust in or out, you know, from actually getting from the job site. But is what was happening was he was trying to hide it, because when I put up a dust barrier and cut, you need to cut slits for wind. It's relief of pressure so that the actual wind can pass through. I was reprimanded for it. Because he said that people would be looking in through those holes. Now, I'm not sure about you, but that kind of throws a red flag up to me. It said, well, we're not doing anything that we need to worry about people seeing.
Right.
Are we?
Right. Then you and must be knowing you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Or potentially wrong. Yeah. Well, anyway, if you have any more, we're going to take a break here. If you'd like to call in the next hour, in about 10 minutes, please feel free to do so, and I'm going to finish up the subject. And I really appreciate you doing what you're doing, and it ain't easy standing up and doing what's right in this town, because it's a small town, getting a job, but sometimes you just have to do what's right for people and for the environment, regardless of the consequences. And so we'll be back in the next hour. So, Charlie, call back about 10:10, if you would. Just a few more questions and we'll be done.
Okay.
Hey, aloha and thank you.
Aloha.
All right.
All right.
Been traveling the country for a long time, entertaining the people.
Yeah, Mavis, we've been a lot of places, seen a lot of things, through it all, and made a lot of friends.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it used to be, no matter what the problem, a little song could make everything all right. But you know, it's getting a little strange around here lately.
Yeah, because there's too much lying, too much crying.
Uh-huh, there's too much killing and too much stealing.
You know, Mavis, we gotta do something to turn this land around.
Yeah, girl, I know what you mean. But we're losing the children, and that's our future. I think we got some people here that can help us out. Come on, y'all. Come on and join in with us. Put your hands together. Because I got a question right here that I wanna ask you. And I wanna ask it now. Listen. Who will stand up and say I do? Say I care about the children, y'all, and what they're going through. Gotta stand, 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 stand
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Chronometrophobia, the fear of clocks, the fear of time.
How's the cost of living? I take what I've been given. Has to say, be strong.
See on my soul, I'm having the impression that my life gon' be a bowl of cherries, but it's very hard for me to cope. Got tired of being broke, this ATLian ain't got no time to sit and mope. Made up my mind while y'all made up y'all beds. On a cold wooden floor is where I laid my head. Born in 1975, never thought I'd make it this far. Still battling in this racial war, trying to find solutions to the situation I'm facing. Only thing that's free is my float that y'all be chasing. Let my niggas know before I go, I drop that knowledge like dropping books. Let's stop the crooks from robbing you of your brains and such, using welfare as a crutch. I'm in it for good, you into my hood, you won't be finding much. Hope that when I'm gone, y'all remember this, what we stood for, of that fame and that glitz. It's beginning to look a lot like the ending. Got to be more careful, know what corners you be bending. Revelations getting impatient, now I'm dead. Remember what I said, I'm gone by your head.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Another lovely day here in Hawaii. We had some great rain yesterday, and just... Sometimes it's if you're bored here in Hawaii with the weather, just wait for 5-10 minutes and it'll change real quick. But that's the beauty of it, you know. And so while everyone else is struggling and with droughts and fires and all, and we're living here in paradise, or some may say heaven. But anyway, I had in the early hour we were talking to a former employee of Hawaii pumping system specialist, and also Washington pumping specialist, a company or two companies operating under the same banner. And recently, I aired on KGMB, that was a story, some of you may have seen it, and the concerns now is that this activity conducted by, the alleged activity, I should say, conducted by this company, was that they were dumping, and some of the material was dumped in the stream at Kapaa Quarry, which threatens and may have possibly impacted the Kauai Nui Marsh, where there's a number of endangered species and probably one of the largest wetlands left in the state of Hawaii. And just again, I use this to try and illustrate to you that it's so easy to describe an entity or an individual as an environmentalist as it's a negative thing. But being an environmentalist, in many cases, there's a lot of complexity to the subject matter in itself. So quite often and I use the term loosely as an environmentalist, I generally don't, but first you have to understand the issue. You got to know the issue and then be able to go back and present it and know the ramifications or the implications of such behaviors dumping. So when someone say to you, this is bad, and then you immediately say, oh, here's another environmentalist complaining. But to be honest with you, in this state of the state of Hawaii, we are so dysfunctional that, in my opinion, and I stand behind this and I will state it over and over, I believe we can do away with these agencies and accomplish the same thing. The agencies that are involved in the current and the trend and the current behavior is nothing more than welfare, because they generate mounds and mounds of paper. You can't approach them, and when you do approach them, you're at odds with them. And initially, they were supposed to be doing this to protect the interests of the environment and the people and so forth. But just myself, I don't go in there and go, okay, you MFs and all of this, and throwing nasty names out at them. And I simply arrive saying, here's information that I have received, or here are photographs, here's information, documentation, or samples, and here's the name of an individual that is willing to testify. It's hard for me to describe with accuracy and believability how I am received by these agencies, whether it's the HPD, whether it's the Attorney General, whether it's the FBI, whether it's EPA. It's as if you're stepping in their path and you're this fat kid who wants to be a security guard and got nothing better to do. You want some attention. And that is the problem in this state. It is dysfunctional. God only knows the true impact of the environmental uglies out there that are just laying waiting, or that are having an impact on our waters when we consume it, on our children. We don't know. And you've heard me say on many occasions that forgivable Gill, or whatever, Gary Gill, he has not met any situation that is not tolerable. You know, everything is minimized. But when you quantify it, if just on the nature and the volume and the repeated behavior on these companies and on individuals and the agencies, it all adds up at the end of the day. We are in a toxic cesspool because we don't know where things are dumped. We don't know who dumped them. We don't know what was dumped. And then when we do engage with the health department and take them by the collar and put their nose in it, they start to whine like a puppy because they are interested more so in the political aspect of it. They're more so interested in protecting the donor aspect of it, who gave money to the current governor or his boss. And believe it or not, and I'm not frustrated and sitting here just spouting, I'm telling you the truth. These are the things that you can ask the eye owners, the Iggy's, and the Jeff Davis and the Mufi Hannemans. You know, well, actually, you can just ask Jeff Davis. He's the only one new. The rest of the guys have been on board here screwing things up and turning their backs on us anyway. So really, it shouldn't be hard, you know. I'd like to know Iona's policies and stance on environmental issues, and will he be aggressive? I'd like to know, does he believe in the global warming? I'd like to know from Mufi Hanneman. I'd like to know, what are they going to do if they become governor, to become man up, so to speak, and do what is right by the people, by the environment, and do it. Charlie, good morning again. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me once again.
Yeah, I really feel good about this. And again, I want to tell the public that you're a former employee of Hawaii Pumping Specialist and Washington Pumping Specialist, same company, mother company. And they are in the business of hauling and retrieving and cleaning tanks, and tanks that contain materials of concern, contaminants and oils and what have you. We were talking earlier. Now, the state is, prior to you coming forward on your own, and I must describe to the public that you never stumble on this thing, and the believability, it wasn't a matter of credibility where you're angry at someone, and I have a different attitude. I will, even if you were angry and just pissed off, I would still listen to what you have to say, because there's going to be truth in everybody's statement, you know, if nothing else. Were you working there? And you say you were working there for what, 3 months?
Yeah, it was a little over 3 months.
Yeah. So let's go back to this for a little bit. Where is his main yard prior to you? How long has he been in Kapaa?
I actually helped him with the move over to Kapaa. During the time when I first started with him, he told me that his yard had closed and they were storing their trucks temporarily up in Halava,
mm-hmm.
in the valley on the side of the road, which is where I met him for the interview, next to his trucks and all his equipment.
Right, so no office, no base yard, no operating yard or anything, huh?
No, the only office that he had used at that time was out of his own house. He told me that it was a temporary location. He owns a house up in Halava, and he had me visit him there daily after work, you know, to discuss our you know, standard our end of day meetings and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so now I've observed and have pictures of his trucks just sitting on the road, and we know the storm drains. Did he ever, or ever, I shouldn't use the word ever, how often did he take best management practices to put around barriers around his trucks that, in case one of them leaked when they were parked on the side of the road or the city streets? Did he ever do that, or would he just park them?
No, they were just parked. There was never any kind of containment used or any kind of cautionary measure that was taken, which, of course, was another concern that was addressed with him, you know, with the material that we were transporting, it being hazardous and whatnot. You know, a leak or a spill, you know, is not a small thing. It's hazardous to the health, potentially life-threatening with different jobs that we had done and different material that we had hauled.
Mm-hmm.
But no, there was no containment ever actually used.
Mm-hmm. In your assessment, what is, maybe we've talked about it the worst, what is one of the most egregious things that jumps out at you that you recall and you carry away, take away from this employment experience with this company that we don't know what to ask? Is there anything unique about this person? I mean, to operate without a license and to park the trucks on the side of the street and sneak into the military bases to service your contract, what other things that rise to that level of surreptitious behavior?
Well, there is some other stuff, you know, of course, and you ask which is the most, but there's so many different things that he's done. One of the things that really is close to my heart is the people that work for him and the employees. You know, first off, we had touched base about just the PPE and the different equipment that he would put his employees' lives at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his employees is his own son, and he would operate and have his son work on these projects. I mean, I understand that personal and business is two different things, but could you just imagine the thought of sending your son to go work with hazardous material? There are deaths annually from handling this material in the proper method now. When you're using proper PPE, mm-hmm. there are still accidents that happen and people, you know, unfortunately pass away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, having him going and doing the jobs, not trained, not knowing what he's doing, not knowing what he's handling, you know, and just seeing that, and just seeing somebody with just no care at all about people's safety, including your own, you know, families.
Mm-hmm. And a tank, I noticed that he does pressure washing and what have you, but I know that a tank could have residual oils and what have you and give off fumes, and you open it up and enter it, the absence of oxygen can immediately render you, it just knock you out, right?
Yes. You know, it can, and just along that note, there wasn't even enough men on the job to properly do the jobs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working for him, the reason that I only stayed employed with him for 3 months, in case, you know, you're wondering about that time, is because of the amount of infractions that I was reporting with him and the disregard that he had for these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have any safety equipment. We didn't have the equipment to retrieve somebody. There's supposed to be a method used to retrieve somebody working in these tanks.
Mm-hmm.
They were to pass out, you know, or in case something did happen, it was never initiated. There was never the correct breathing apparatus used on the projects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a complete and total disregard for the safety of anyone and everyone in the willing and just wanting to make money. That's what it comes down to. How can I make more money on this project?
What's perplexing is that generally on military bases and federal work sites, there's a overseer or one who operations manager or that quality control, and they do that. They look to see the safety concerns. Where were these people?
We had inspectors come briefly on different times, and I actually would get a text message saying that we have an inspector coming today from Dingo. And basically, when they get there, pull the guys out and go on break. That was the policy that he had me use. And he told me, he you know, assured me that, oh, it's just because I don't want anybody to accidentally, you know, do something that could get us in trouble.
While being observed. Wow.
Yeah.
So he had it planned, huh?
Yes, he had it figured out somehow.
And what would you say to the state and the city to, how would you recommend they address this now, some of the things to avoid or so that they can be detecting, for example, that one instance of that go send them on lunch break so that they won't be doing anything, so they really can't be assessed or evaluated if they're doing it right or in compliance. What would you say to the state? Do unannounced visits or not just the state, but who is it, OSHA and the worksite inspector? Is there anything else or recommendations you would suggest?
Well, one of the things is, you know, first off, you know, Dingo's been around for a little while, and I've noticed that between him and other companies, everybody butters up to the inspector, of course. You don't want to get in trouble. You don't want, you know, him to look at you in a bad attitude, because then he might walk over and kick the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these inspectors come on site, and they have the same attitude that the majority of the workers and myself and a bunch of other people have, whereas the fines are so grievous, you would never dare do anything wrong, so I'm not really worried about it.
Right. Okay, because of the punishment is so severe if you are caught, that so they believe in that, and so it's basically a casual relationship, eat, drink, and be merry.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So this then presents a problem. And the reality is, so every year, I can recall back, there's a young man that was working on a tank doing some welding, and they failed to cleanse it and air it out properly, and it blew up and killed him.
Yeah.
There was another gentleman who was working out there in the old cement plant, and the tower collapsed and killed him. And because of the sad part about it, even as we talk right now, and as dangerous as this is, our state office of hazard and OSHA,
yeah,
only in the instance of the tower collapsing, fined them $750.
You see, and this is where I would like to urge people. You know, you have these officials, you have these laws, you have these companies and organizations that are supposed to be doing something about this.
Mm-hmm.
But these are people's husbands, people's children, people's relatives. This is your husband going to work every day, you know, to make money for your home.
Right.
A lot of these people, you know, we go into this field and we work and we think that, oh, the fines are too grievous. These guys would never do anything wrong. And we're subjected to this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it's brought up like we are in this instance with Dingo Sanchez, What will happen? There's nothing right now that I know of that the state is pursuing. I know they're investigating, but what are they doing to investigate?
Right.
You know, what's the sense of urgency that they have? I was never contacted, as far as I know. You know, when the state was originally contacted from his other employees that had worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
I was never told anything. I was never contacted, and I was a general manager.
Right, and you would think that you would be one of the first. Are you willing to talk, or we're going to subpoena you? We're conducting. We got this information. We see he's hauling and does not have a permit. So obviously that's illegal in itself, right? And then you're also dumping. So if those out there that want to play the lawyer for this company, just ask this question. If you're required to have a license to transport this material. That's one thing. And then you're required to have a permit to dump it. So if the state say, well, how do we prove that he was hauling it? Well, you contact the city and county of Honolulu and say, look, let us see your report and the permit you issued to him, because clearly he wouldn't be obtaining a permit to dump into the sewer lines if he wasn't hauling or weren't hauling those materials. So it's an easily done case. I mean, like that. But the problem is, do we really want to hurt enterprise? And the shame of it is, we're poisoning the environment, with threatening the health and welfare of the people, and then immediately we're subjecting these young men to a predicament, and young women to a predicament where it's volatile, it's deadly, it's at any time something can go wrong, and it has gone wrong on many occasions, and it could be the death or debilitating injuries or what have you. So this is, is it an environmental problem? Is it? I think even in, quote, third world nations, we even protect the people in the sweatshops now better than this. But there's apparently no oversight. When a man can subject his workers, as you describe, to these conditions that are potentially dangerous without the proper protective gear and all of that, and then to simply circumvent those rules and detection by sending his men on lunch break when the inspectors show up. Wow.
Yeah.
Life is cheap, huh?
Yeah.
Or just for a plate, about as cheap as a plate lunch.
Apparently.
And the family, and who out there amongst us, the listeners, would want to receive a call such as this, that their son or their daughter is dead or maimed for life? Hold on here. Good morning, caller. Come in a question.
Just a comment, and I have to think a little more about it later, but I want to throw this out for now for you to chew on if you have time. And that is, this is another example of the privatization and how bad that can be, because privatization always has the profit motive.
Yes.
And so I think that we got to quit yelling about big government and yell more about privatization as an example.
I wholeheartedly, I'm doing flips backwards now, just in agreement with you, because I've said that whether it's as simple as, instead of having the police the harbors, they hire private guards. And the private guards trample on your rights because they're told to do anything you want to do to protect this harbor. Normally it's a public place and there are constraints and restrictions, but we are divested of our civil rights and constitutional rights via the hiring of private security guards and private people.
Yeah, I must be the masses of people think if you privatize something, that means we don't have to pay for it. We pay for it plus the profit.
Yeah, and then plus the mistake.
Yeah, and so the idea is to trim away the expenses, right, the overhead, by cutting corners, and so anyway, that's my two cents worth for
today. Yeah, funny you mentioned that, because I'd like to share one brief story. Out at Tesoro, they had a fire. I discovered that they had a fire.
Mm-hmm.
I called the media. The media came, and I also went to photograph it and videotape it. I'm standing on the same sidewalk as Dick Allgaier from KITV. He has a camera trained on the area where the fire was took place, and I was standing there. The tall, handsome, stout-looking machismo man walks out there, and he whips out his wallet, and in there he shows me his security badge, and then and I could also see his FBI badge, because he was a former FBI agent, so he was retired. Now, he told me that I must leave because I'm here filming the place. But he didn't tell Dick Allgaier that.
Oh, my God.
Right? And so he comes out on the public sidewalk across the street to tell me this. You know, sorry, I'm not in Mississippi anymore. If you'd called me 35, 40 years ago, I'd say, damn, man, you got a badge? I'm on my knees. But now I know the corruption and the behavior and know my civil rights. And I, you know, so you're right. the privatization of this whole process is yet another element of depriving us of our resources.
Yeah, and that feeds into the corruption of the candidates for public office and the existing ones because, of course, they want to continue to get their privatized contracts and their profits, and so they buy campaigns and so on. I mean, think Halliburton, right?
That's yeah. Well, to quote my dear friend, Ms. Kobayashi, I never look at my bills or my costs of my dinner, the price of a dinner. I never would have it, right?
Yeah.
Well, how do you then accurately report?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
You had a $5 dinner, you know. So this whole town is corrupt. And the unfortunate thing is this gentleman that's on the phone now, Charlie, and people like him, they go to do a job, to do a work, and they're exposed to the deadly in conditions
yeah.
and situations and what have you. And it's wrong.
I really appreciate his integrity, too, and taking a stand. It's I'm very impressed with what he's done.
Well, I am too, and it lends itself to many things to say that for the voters out there, you know, I'm very adamant about don't vote for them because they stand on the street corner waving a sign.
That's right.
When you get a chance, ask them. If you don't have anything to ask them about, I'm giving you something. Ask them, why the hell is things so fractured and fragmented and dysfunctional? Why is it that a state agency can regulate and then see this truck driving a $600,000 truck, just one of them, with the name on it, pumping service specialist or whatever, and then you don't bother to check to see if that person has a license, but you then learn he has a license and you don't move to shut him down?
Well, that's what we pay for, so-called bribery to get the contracts.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Charles, go ahead if you have a comment.
No, the only thing else that I'd like to comment about was, once again, getting back to the employees that work for him, you know, one of the things that I meant to touch on earlier when you had asked me about things that he had done in a grievous nature was also the actual employment that he had with these guys. The majority of the times that the employment ended was because he, all the way down, just refused to pay them on multiple occasions. There was quite a few employees that came to me and told me, you know, hey, I got my last check. I was short hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, of course, take it up to Dingo, and it's one of those things. It's, I don't feel that you were working, the entire time that you reported. Wait a minute, the guy's on site with me. I'm the one that's verifying it, you know, and literally, you just took half of somebody's check. How do you take half of somebody's check?
And then with the general manager vouching for the people saying, no, they did, in fact, work this, and he still ignore you, correct?
Correct. And then, you know, later on I heard from, there was two employees that had been with him, you know, before I had. And both of them told me that's what happens every time. People get tired of him not paying them and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I had actually, I contacted somebody that had worked for him before and they told me, yeah, he ended up owing them. They were working on a Davis Bacon job and they were owed almost $5,000 that they never got paid.
Mm-hmm.
There was a few different checks that, you know, they told me that Dingo had just basically told them that, oh, the contract, there's problems with the contract. Oh, you know, we have issues right now with the paperwork. For some reason, you guys didn't, you know, file your paperwork correctly, and now they're doubting that we did our job. Oh, this story after fabricated story. And from what I've, you know, talked to this person about and a few others that I've been told, it's just no pay. People literally come to work for him, and that's how much the guy is after money. Is that, you know, it's every place I can take it from, wherever I can get it. Even
right.
And now $5,000 might not sound like a lot to a lot of people, but at the same time, you got to understand that we are coming, and a lot of the people that work in these industries, we're living check to check, just trying to get by, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're barely making ends meet. Now you go ahead and you're taking half of our check randomly because you feel that we might not have been doing your job.
But
well, I'm the general manager standing there saying, yeah, we've done everything. Here's the paperwork. Here's the points. Here it is right here. No, they were right. They did everything they were supposed to.
Mm-hmm. And then there are other companies that hold up, you know, I look at it as a comparison, and they may be flawed too a bit, but I watch Grace Pacific and other companies, and they, I've not heard anybody talk about that kind of, if it's a Davis-Bacon job, I've never heard anybody come from Grace Pacific and say they're cheating me. Because Davis-Bacon requires compensation, fair compensation to the workers, correct?
Yes, as far as I know, it not only requires, but it's supposed to regulate it also.
Mm-hmm. Hold on one second. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Thank you very much. Your guest could speak for the state, for the city, for every agency in terms of corruption, talking about public-private partnerships, semi-autonomous, the water department, and HART. And maybe you could explain the significance of semi-autonomous partnerships.
Well, I've always said privatization is bad. And it's a sneaky way of a person that either is affiliated with a special interest to gravitate or move into or migrate into government and then in turn propose or get elected in and, but as a people's man, but really he's a company's man. And as soon as he or she gets in, they implement rules that will facilitate the privatization and steer contracts to individual private companies. And so, therefore, in doing that, once you steer these contracts, you also must shepherd in a climate that there is no inspection, there is no OSHA, there is no, and so causing a wedding of the governors, appointed directors of these agencies, the city managers, and all of that, when they go to the nice big dinners with the lobbyists and what have you, these relationships, when Mazie Hirono and Tulsi Gabbard and who are the other guys that are up there representing us. But when they go there, they come back and they say, we have lots of money and we bring in great contracts. But then they don't ever stand back and say, look, you got these contracts, but we have health and welfare and safety of the environment and the people, the workers. We want them treated with dignity. We don't have that.
They don't want any public regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, they enhance themselves, their corporations, their stockholders, and et cetera. And your thank you so much for your program and for your explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. But, Charlie, go ahead if you have a comment there.
No, I'm standing right with you on that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just see that there's such a price to pay.
Yes.
And so this is what irritates me when I see DeJoux. I don't hear him talking about workers' rights and all of those things before the election, but when there's an opening, kaboom. I don't hear of Colleen Hanabusa talking about these things when she's in office to protect the interests of the workers. It is necessary to revisit these things. You leave home and you kiss your wife and you pat your little boy on the head and say, I'll see you this evening at 5 and we're going to come back and we're going to go play some ball or whatever. You may not return because you're driving a truck that tire blow out because the boss wouldn't bother to spend money to keep it up to safety codes, or the brakes went out coming down the poly, and all of those things, or an unskilled, untrained individual working with you releases a valve and say that I've cleaned the tank out and it's clear, and you get in there and you suffocate and you die or it blows up. These are real tragedies, realistic things. We're not creating or inventing these things. And where is our state legislators and where is our state senators and the congressional staff and the senatorial staff in ensuring that if you bring in the honey and the money, bring in the policing? And that's what's missing. And we see it in our Veterans Affairs issues. And it's nothing unique to just employment. But apparently, we've gotten away from, you know, we loosely say, well, we're not representing the people, government for the people. Well, I'm going to give you some specifics and tell you, government is not for the people. Not because I disagree or think that I'm just aloof. I'm laying out specifics. Government here in this state is not for the people. It's for the business. And I guess they figure there's people waiting to get in line to have a job, so they don't need to be worried about Charlie's safety or Carol's safety. Because if Carol dies or Charlie dies out there working, there'll be 10 others waiting to get a job. And I want to add something. There's another situation on the Big Island. Charlie, since you came forward, someone else saw this and came forward, and there's a similar situation on the Big Island, and we're going to expose that story maybe next week and start on that one. But let me just share with you folks out there, there's an element in the industry or the employment of these young men. So let's say if you have a criminal record and you're on probation, you get hired. Now, you need a job anyway, because if you don't have a job, your probation officer says your ass is going back to jail. You know, so you go out there. There are people in industries out here that victimize the people that are on probation. They get them in, they hire them, and then they tell them. They cheat them of their salaries. They tell them, you have to do this work. If you don't, I'm going to fire you. Well, guess what? You now have a person who is caught in a quagmire, and that quagmire is deadly, because he could harm himself or harm the other workers, because if he don't do it, he gets fired and he goes back to jail. Or if he does it and get caught, he gets to go back to jail anyway, because he's behaving in a criminal fashion. Is that fair, Charlie?
No, that's, I mean, it's not even anything to be considered fair.
Yeah.
But it seems to be something that does happen quite often. I mean, I've witnessed a few different things along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and unfortunately, you know, people use things like that for leverage in the employment opportunity, and it's something that it's wrong on just the human values. I mean, the morals, it just goes to show the kind of people that you're actually dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And this is not an indictment of this specific company, but this is something I've witnessed across the board. That is why I say and proclaim that this is a state the worst for workers' health and welfare than anywhere I've witnessed, anywhere. I have contacted OSHA myself, and you talking about surly and arrogance, you've never seen it until you talk to the OSHA people. Never. You've never seen it. It rises to a level unbelievable. I've sent video to them, and they then take that video and go back to the city in this example and say, what do you think? You know, this guy Cox is making trouble again. And then write me a letter saying, well, we gave your complaint to the city, the violator, and they've said, in this instance, the trucks were backing more than 100 yards. And again, if you look at a lot of the injuries and death that have occurred from the city trucks, trash trucks, they were in backing situations, backing over the senior citizen, except for the one in the crosswalk recently. So there is something out there, folks. It's a deadly game. And that game, the referees are the city and the elected officials. They allow it to happen. The state health department, I brought you guys the Kamehameha Schools matter, where they have a couple illegal dump sites. Let me just share with you. I gave them the information. I investigated and broke the story, and you would think the state would be very happy. But because it's Kamehameha Schools, I made a request recently to ask Steve Chang and his solid waste branch, could I please see the photographs that you're taking of this, all the contaminants that are up there? Well, no, we're not taking pictures, because we're going to let them take. Oh, really? So you're not policing it. So I go back to him just last week and say, well, you know, Steve, I've learned something different. I understand that you are taking pictures, and I understand that what they are submitting is contrary to what your picture shows, and why are you holding out on the pictures? Why are you hiding them? Oh, how did you know? How did you learn about it? It doesn't matter how I learned. The fact is, you are giving the public one statement, and you now have photographs that you are holding back, and you're pretending that Kamehameha Schools is doing the right thing and you're concealing the real evidence of what it is, how bad it is that they've dumped up there. This is where it starts, from top down to bottom. Now, that's not an indictment of every state worker. There are many of them, honest, many city workers, but you're a captive audience. So anyway, Charles, I applaud you for coming and speaking out, and again, I'll be walking alongside of you here, and you're going to be meeting with the state and give a formal statement?
Yes, I'm going to be meeting with the state. They've contacted me and giving them a formal statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to work with it and make sure that, you know, they stick by their guns.
Yeah, exactly, and or their iron pipes. But anyway, that's I really appreciate it. Is there anything else in closing?
No, you know, basically that's the most that we've touched on. So that's everything for now.
Okay, Charles, thank you, and I'm sure on behalf of the other listeners out there, those that care, really appreciate it, because it's rare to get an insight. And we'll wait to see how the state come to prove all of these things and the allegations that are tossed out there. But I saw the site firsthand, and I saw the trucks parked along the road, and no company, many companies get cited for leaving their trucks on the side of the road. This guy, they refer to his office as being the side of the road.
Yeah.
So something's wrong, and I detect that I've heard that he's a braggart about all of his connections in government. So I don't know. I haven't had any proof of anything, but I've heard. Have he ever bragged to you about his connections?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about that a few different times. So, I mean, if you look at the actual state of the yard and the different things that he does, and how blatantly he leaves everything, you know, out at the Kapaa quarry where he was dumping, and his entire ground is just saturated, which is on the news.
Right.
It's obvious that he has gotten away with it, you know, and feels safe at this point.
Yeah, no worries, brah.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. Go ahead, caller. Thank you for waiting and calling in.
Well, thank you very much. I just want to thank you for the program and thank your guest, because I listen to it as often as possible and I need information and education, and both of you certainly give that to me. Thank you very, very much.
All righty. Thank you. Well, anyway, thank you, Charles, and I appreciate it. And let me know, please, you have my number and everything, and hopefully the state will move in, and hopefully the EPA, because this is major. This is to deal with chemicals and Clean Water Act violations and what have you. So thank you again.
Of course.
And aloha.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
I'm going to take a one-minute break here for a minute. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I appreciate you listening. Again, that was Charles, the former employee general manager for the Hawaii Pumping Service Specialist LLC and the Washington Pumping Specialist. What I was trying to do, I am trying to do, or attempting to do, is that I believe that we in this state, we have some of the smartest and astute voters there are. But the information that we get, and we're never presented with the full story. We're faced with snippets, you know. And there's no perfect world, and you're not going to see or witness a perfect show here either that delivers everything. But I will assure you, my attempt is to say, being that we are smart voters, if we're able to have something that we can assemble and use it to determine if this guy's lying or should he go flying out the window or what have you, that's what's missing in the state, the information. We're never given all the greater details of things, and then we can deduce for ourselves that, well, gee, this is funny. The recent one, and I applaud KGMB for coming out with Romy Cocciolo, and I really appreciate it. Some say, well, look at Rod Tam, what happened to him. Well, Rod Tam should have been spilling the beans, too. That's just the nature of it. You can't wait for the public to come to your rescue. So on one hand, I applaud Romy Cocciolo for spilling the beans, because you do get comments, and you get people like Ekaika Anderson standing, we need to be re-educated or need to be brought up on the rules and what have you. Yeah, right. So why don't you advocate that every time someone is pulled over on the highway, they get to make that request, that they too go back to driving school, and so that we'll forgive your crime or your speeding 100 miles an hour in a child in a school zone. Yeah, let's do those kinds of things. But these are the people we vote in. No ethics. Many of them, we don't have, as I've said to you, we don't have ethics in the ethics department. No one would continue to say, well, we're going to pass the rules and require you to disclose who donate to you or what your financial interests are, but we're going to hold it for a couple of years. That's not running a good government. A government that you don't own, but the people own it. So we're stuck. The situation with the Hawaiian homelands, I'm still waiting. The Attorney General office said, well, you gave us a written statement, and the person that gave the statement said he was giving bribes to the land agent for the state health department, state DHHL, but you're not a witness. You are just a third party. So the entire thing is corrupt. The entire process and what it leads to, it invites people to take upon themselves to act violent and act violence against people like myself. And then in turn, the police department, they're not doing anything on these investigations, dragging their feet. But yet, you saw that the chief of police, boy, the uncle steals a mailbox and he has a special team investigating that. So again, you could be as quiet as a church mouse or as verbose as I am. You are still subjected to the same inhumane, uncivilized behavior potentially that I was subjected to being stricken or attacked or assaulted. So I'm here to say to you that if you're looking for more proof as why you should become more involved in your voting, and selective is who you select to represent you, this is the time and place right now, because everything here is corrupt. If you know someone, you can get everything you want. You can get the police department to go investigate. And my incident and the way the police department and the FBI was handling, they handed back to the police department and what have you, I don't even worry about that. After I saw this young lady being assaulted and being beaten by the police officer, I decided don't complain about anything. Don't bitch about anything. You just man up, Mr. Cox, and take it as it happens and react to it if it occurs again. But imagine domestic violence and then nothing happens. I don't know, but the problem is no real investigation. I don't want to indict the officer that was involved before we know the whole story, but the video tells the story. But in this town, you're likely to see our police department, talking about privatization, the police department has become nothing more than a security guard for big companies. Oh, police are looking for this man. He stole 2 candy canes from the store last week. They have a personnel standing there, police spokesperson, standing there reporting this, and here's a TV station. Oh, police are looking for this man. He stole some watches. But police are not looking for this man who beat the crap out of a woman. I'm just telling you like it is, folks. So it's up to you to change this pattern. It's up to you to demand. If this is what you accept, then this is what we will live in. This is a cesspool that we will live in. And that's what it's called. Go ahead, caller, real quick.
Thank you. 4 words, Nestor Garcia and Ethics Commission. Thank you very much.
All right, but Nestor's also telling us the news now. Where's
I Ethics? I know. You're okay. Supposed to believe him? 40 pages of conflict of interest? And the Ethics Commission gave him a small fine, and in 2 weeks he was back voting on the city council.
Yeah. So, folks, you don't have to get a hit upside the head. Or maybe I should practice hitting you upside the head and knock some sense into your voters out there. No, I'm just kidding. I don't believe in violence. But something has to change. If, you know, the cost of living, we tolerate people out there, and all we hear is that they're defecating and urinating on the sidewalks in public and all. But we're failing to hold the dudes who said that they can fix it and make it and work it and lead us into the promised land. We don't hold them accountable. We just let them spew the rhetoric and the hatred and the demeaning of other human beings. So anyway, I'm going to look forward to getting me a house, a historic house, and paying $300 a year for taxes, get an exemption. I, too, can go out and I'll beat the homeless around and write rules to harass them if you gave me $300 discount. Go ahead, caller, real quick.
Yeah, real quick. You know, this is a perfect opportunity for the legislator to clean up the police department and open the, you know, lift the veil, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
I know so many situations where the police refuse to make a report on other cops, and it's really corrupt, but the normal public doesn't see it. They just go about their day-to-day basis, pay the bills, but it's really bad.
Right.
And, you know, we just got a vision of what's going on, but this goes on every single day.
And I had one police officer, and believe you me, policemen don't go out to do things wrong, but what he told me the other day, he says, you know, look, here's the way things work. There, 99% of the police officers see something they will do, but if they do, they are persecuted, the little, you know, by someone else who says it was making trouble. Not just a clandestine effort, but you just made trouble for the agency by speaking out.
Yes, absolutely.
So I drive by on the freeway and I see policemen pulling over, helping someone fix a flat. And at 3 o'clock in the morning when they show up at my house because someone has attempted to burn and they didn't drag their feet getting there, I have to honor that, you know. But there's that element in the democratic process and the elections process that we need to remind them, not the police officers, but the administrators and the legislators. This is what we need.
And speaking of that, too, I've been to internal affairs. When the police investigate other police, it's a complete joke. And they give you a letter saying, we did our investigation. You can't question about it. And you can't ask who we investigated or who we spoke to. But we found nothing wrong. Thank you very much for your concern. I mean, it's a joke.
Right. Yeah.
If they clean up their own house, I'll respect them a lot more. Yeah. You know? I want to respect them.
Yeah, and there are guys that put their life on the line when they suit up and go out at night or in the morning.
Sure. And, sure, I understand that.
You know, and I want to respect that, but we can't respect the other behavior. And the chief needs the answer to all of this. Okay, hey, thank you guys for joining me, and we'll see you next week. Aloha.
Aloha.
has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.